2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
Well, you heard Andy moments ago. He's going to be rejoining the show with all of the traffic trouble spots, which look like there's plenty of them. Watching I-15 right now into Salt Lake County. It is a mess. Broadcast house downtown looking outside. It came out of the blue at us. And Dave, your commute in through Davis County this morning, well,
it was awesome. Debbie, it was great. I love the snow. My goodness, what in the world happened this morning?
How was it?
Thank goodness I was just ahead of the chaos.
How was it?
I was, well, I'm telling you, it was brutal. I could not see a single lane on my drive in. It wasn't until Woods Cross that I saw a line. Like, it took me probably 20 miles to see a line on the road. It's 9:08. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
Well, you're in good company this morning, Dave, because a lot of Davis County commuters shocked by the amount of snow that stacked up so quickly. While in Salt Lake County until just a little while ago, it was smooth sailing. And our producer, Michelle, told me about her commute from the Layton area, which is kind of up in your neck of the woods, right?
I was on the highway and I couldn't see the roads at all. So I was basically following the car in front of me. I couldn't see anything. It was too dark.
Yeah, you're just following taillights. Straight up, you're just following taillights and hoping that they're not off the road. It was like this, and I will tell you, I was shocked. I didn't see, and Michelle either, didn't see one snowplow. Now, I'm not saying they weren't out there. I'm just saying I didn't see one snowplow. It was incredible.
Countdown to...
Snow totals in the mountains, ferocious. 33 inches in the last 24 hours in the Snow Basin area. Brighton Ski Resort, 60 inches in the last 7 days. 763 inches total to date at Brighton Ski Resort. 763. I mean, they could get above 800. We're going to go deep, in depth. Here's how skiers and snowboarders might be reacting to this.
It's dying, dude. I'm so glad the powder is back, dude. Look at those stizzy ridges.
I have no idea what he just said, but that's what happens when you're talking about powder days, right? It was incredible for the ski resorts. I wonder, how long are they going to stay open? The plan is the end of April. There's no way you can shut it down in April. There better be May ski.
Launch countdown one.
Our top story, slammed by lake effect snow. KSL meteorologist Matt Johnson in our line of sight right now. He's in studio with us to bring us an update. Salt Lake City pretty much skated until just a bit ago, and now it's coming down in buckets. KSL News Radio's Adam Small has been in Davis County all morning long, where it's been a train wreck.
Up here, I mean, I just talked to a person in their driveway, probably like 7 to 8 inches of snow on the ground up here. Some areas seeing more.
Speaking of Davis County, I'm getting a call right now from the Davis School District.
You know what they're going to tell
you? I don't know what they're going to tell me.
They'll tell you school's been canceled for the day. Well, in-person learning canceled, Dave.
Remote. Remote it is, kids.
Dave and Dejanovic.
The Law. Dave and Dejanovic.
Dave and Dejanovic.
Special coverage of the top local story.
I saw temperatures as low as 13 degrees. 13 degrees in Vernal. 19 degrees, it's a warming trend in some other areas. Feet of snow. This is a spring special. It was exclusive to Davis and Weber County friends until just a bit ago, Dave. It's in Salt Lake County now.
Yeah, when I woke up this morning, went out to my truck, the truck bed was nearly full. It was absolutely incredible. More than a foot of snow on top of my car. I was having to clear. I couldn't even use my ice scraper, you know, like the 2-foot ice scraper to like brush off the snow. I had to karate chop it with my arm and sweep it off my truck.
KSL meteorologist Matt Johnson sitting in studio with us this morning monitoring this weather. So let's talk about where it's at right now, Matt, and where it's going.
Yeah, so we do have that lake effect band that is been parked out over Davis County, and that's why all the trouble's been there. We're talking widespread 6 to 12 inches through the county, and like you said, some places picking up, you know, 16 or more is what the reports we've seen this morning. We do anticipate for this lake effect band to start breaking. It's already showing signs of weakening. However, even in its weakened state, we're seeing, you know, snow still coming down.
So I've heard rumors, a little whispers in the newsroom that we might see some blue skies at some point today.
Isn't that? Yeah.
And I don't believe you. I'm looking at you. I'm staring into your soul. I don't believe you.
I know. It's possible, though. I think that most of this snow will have tapered off by the lunch hour. And then working into the afternoon, we filter in some drier air, and that might even be enough to get us some blue skies, if you can even believe that.
Wow. But short-lived.
Yeah.
Right.
This is just a morning deal.
And the morning deal, but it's short-lived because later in the week we're going to be getting more, right, Matt?
Yep. We've got another storm lined up. You could have guessed that without even looking at the forecast, just the way things have been going with the storm train. Late Wednesday, we're looking at another round of rain and snow that will persist through Thursday. I mean, that's going to add another 1 to 2 feet to the mountains. Valley locations could see a little bit of snow. Hard to dial that in right now with confidence just because it's a little finicky with these late season storms. But and then after that, we take a break Friday, Saturday, but another storm late Sunday into early next week.
Are we just obliterating snow records right now?
We are. We just passed. I mean, Solitude, they just clocked in with 700 inches on the season. That's the first time they've ever seen that. It's an all-time high. You heard about Alta earlier this weekend. And, yeah, I mean, we are now in uncharted area, according to records throughout the area, right? Because the snow records in the mountains only go back to the early 80s.
Okay.
Luckily, we started taking those. Alta goes back to the 40s, but even so, they don't have any readings this high.
Incredible. Matt Johnson, thank you for joining us. Best of luck today. I know it has been chaotic. It's been a wild morning, but we appreciate you joining us.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks, Matt. A big lineup straight ahead. We're going to get Andy Farnsworth from the KSL Traffic Center into the conversation with the trouble spots that he's seeing, including Legacy Highway. We know that has been a wreck all morning long. Adam Small giving us the lowdown on what's been happening in Davis County as he has been making it end-to-end there, trying to keep an eye on all of the snow totals in Davis County. And then to your point, Dave, we're going to get a UDOT spokesperson on the line to ask, where were the plows this morning?
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and DeGenovic.
Dave and DeGenovic.
Special coverage of the top local story.
We're talking about snow totals in feet, not inches. And we are going to belly up to the round table that is brought to you by feet of snow and temperatures in the teens. We're just 5 days from April 1st. And in the roundtable today, Dave, we're going to first hit traffic with Heather Kelly. We got a report from Davis County where Adam Small has been all morning long. And then in third position is UDOT to answer your question, where are the plows today?
Yeah, when I was driving in this morning, it was incredible. This was on the freeways. So I drove on I-15. I moved over to Legacy Parkway. I didn't see a single snowplow, and the roads were just brutal. I didn't see a line on the road for about 20 miles. Now, while I'm driving, Deb, I get the phone call from the Davis School District that tells me, hey, late start today. Because the snow is so bad, it's late start. Then, as this show started, I get another call from the Davis School District that said, we're canceling it today in the Davis School District. We're going to do just remote learning.
Here's the list of schools. Davis, as Dave just said, is on remote learning as of now. Weber District, Morgan County, Ascent Academy in Farmington. New Ames. And then what does that follow? Wheelman School of Discovery on delayed start. As of right now, Weber State University was on delayed start as well, starting in about 40 minutes. We're going to, of course, keep a close eye on that. Let's jump out to Heather Kelly in the traffic center. Hi, Head.
Hi, Deb.
What's it looking like out there now up in Legacy, in the Legacy area? And I know you've got a lot more to talk about than just Legacy Highway.
It's still really bad on Legacy. I mean, the good news is, I guess, is that some of the northbound traffic on Legacy is moving a bit better now, heading through Farmington. And the snow has stopped for a moment in that area. But because traffic was stopped for so many hours, the plows just haven't been able to get through that stretch from Centerville into Farmington.
Heather, as I've been watching it, like there's been a lot of slide offs. It looks like you've been reporting on all morning long as well, all across the county.
Oh, I can't even count how many slide offs and accidents we've had. In fact, we just got a message a few minutes ago from someone that says Main Street in Layton is closed at Gentile Street because a semi truck got stuck on a hill. So, I mean, it's not just the freeways. It's all the city streets, the side streets that people just can't maneuver through.
One of our texters weighing in this morning, Heather, saying 2.5 hour drive from Layton into Sugar House. So let's take our listeners into Salt Lake County right now. We're looking outside Broadcast House, and we just got slammed. It finally got here. It finally got here. It was about 8 o'clock this morning. What are the freeways, some of the side streets looking like in Salt Lake County from your perspective?
Well, pretty much everything north of 3300 South in the Salt Lake Valley is just snow covered right now. And there are some areas of the 201 freeway, the West Side Belt, where visibility is an eighth to a quarter of a mile at best. I had a report that there was a stalled vehicle on I-80. I can't see the traffic on I-80, and the camera is just sitting like 20 feet above the roadway. And I can't even see the road, let alone any cars on it.
Is Utah County getting out of this one?
Right now they are.
Unreal.
Originally this lake effect bands were predicted to move into the Salt Lake Valley earlier than it did. So it sounds like the wind stalled out a little bit. And so it's just taken a really long time for these storms to move south out of Davis County. But Davis County is still getting hit with some snow showers.
Thanks, Heather. We appreciate it. Getting an update from one of our listeners, Dave, on our text line, it says the Weber District is delayed, not remote today. So if I misspoke, I apologize. It is the Davis District that is on remote today. That's the one that your kids are.
Yeah, Weber and Morgan are delayed, but Davis is canceled / remote. It's not canceled, it's just remote.
I spoke to KSL News Radio's Adam Small, which has been he's been reporting from the Davis area all morning long, and I think his coverage about what's been going on up there explains why the Davis School District decided to go to a remote learning model today.
It's been crazy out here in Davis County because I know down in Salt Lake, Utah County, it's not gotten a lot. But out here, I mean, you're talking about thick snowfall coming down pretty quickly. It's not even really been flurries. It's been heavy snow. I've been spending most of my day between like Centerville to Kaysville, and it just won't stop. I mean, you're looking at up here, I mean, I just talked to a person in their driveway, probably like 7 to 8 inches of snow on the ground up here. Some areas seeing more.
That was Adam Small from KSL News Radio, who has been out all morning long driving in this and giving us up-to-the-minute updates. Mitch Shaw joins us now from UDOT, spokesman. And Mitch, my goodness, it has been overwhelming. And I think part of what is so unique about this storm is it has been so centralized to the northern part of the, well, at least Davis, Weber County.
Yeah, that's right. And I think overwhelming, excuse me, overwhelming is a really good word to describe what's going on there right now. So we have, you know, we've known that this storm was coming in. We have a team of meteorologists that have been tracking it. And we knew it was going to come in. But what's happening is the snow is falling at a rate so fast and so heavy that it's hard for our crews to keep up. So it's like we go out and we plow a stretch, and it seems like as soon as we're done plowing a stretch of road, you know, minutes later, the road's covered again. And what has happened, that creates all kinds of residual impacts. So what has happened is the snow's kind of stacked up, and that's caused traffic to back up. And people don't realize, you know, if you're stuck in traffic, our plows are probably stuck in traffic too. And we're seeing a lot of that happen right now, particularly on the Legacy Parkway. So we're doing our best to keep up, but it's been really difficult this morning.
Mitch Shaw, spokesperson with the Utah Department of Transportation, live on the line for obvious reasons this morning. We know y'all are you know, scooting along on these freeways. Some cases you're barely moving. We're watching the traffic cameras here, the UDOT traffic cameras, Mitch, in studio. I-15 is now a mess up in the Salt Lake County area, traffic moving slowly, and the roads are snow-covered. And what's been going on all morning long in Davis County and Weber County has now moved into Salt Lake County. But Dave came in this morning, as well as our producer, and said, I didn't see a plow at 6:30 this morning. Were the plows slow to start, or was it just a matter of just too much to hit all at once?
Yeah, the latter for sure. Our plows were out. Like I said before, we tracked these storms, and we knew the storm was coming in, and we pre-treated the roads, first of all, and we've had our plows out all morning. Since the snow has started to hit the ground, we've had our plows out. And, what you're seeing is essentially it's hard for us to keep up. We have, you know, a finite amount of resources, and it's just been – the snow's been coming down at a rate where it's hard to keep up. Like I said before, the snow will fall, and we'll clear it. And then the snow will be back on the road in a matter of minutes. So we're trying to go from here to there. And, it's been difficult. Our plows have been out there, but we've had a challenge trying to keep up.
How badly have you obliterated your snow removal budget?
I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but we have definitely exceeded our snow budget for this year. We exceeded it. It's been a few weeks ago, so we've exceeded it a while ago, and we're going to try to keep the roads. We're not going to try. We're going to keep the roads clear as best as we can. What we're doing is, we're delaying sort of non-essential, non-emergency maintenance paving projects that you would have seen us typically do in the spring. We're going to delay those until the new fiscal year, which starts in July. So a lot of the work that you would typically see us do earlier in the year is going to be delayed into the summer. And that's just so we could pull some money together and keep our plow operations going.
When you are over budget, do you have to scale back?
We have not scaled back. We're always going to find a way. We're going to find the money to keeping snow off the roads is the first priority. I mean, you can imagine what would happen if we weren't out plowing the roads in a storm like this.
Goodness, yeah.
It's something that we can't afford to do, so we find a way to get it done.
So there's not been any decrease in plows or anything, even though you are over budget?
No, there's not. In fact, there's been an increase. We've had to order more materials like salt and brine, stuff like that, the things we use to pre-treat the road. This winter has obviously taken a toll on our plow operators. They've had little rest. They've been out there working a lot of overtime hours, but it's also taken a major toll on our equipment. So if anything, we've increased operations.
And Mitch, what we just heard you say was that as a result of being over budget and Mother Nature not backing down, UDOT will be postponing spring like road repair projects.
Yeah, some of them.
To make up that shortfall.
We prioritize You know, some things will need to be done. But if it's a if we deem it non-essential, non-emergency, and we can put it off until the new fiscal year starts, that's what we'll do.
Mitch Shaw, thanks for joining us from UDOT.
You're welcome.
Continuing to follow the developing story of this pretty major winter blast that has hit us and going on most of the night for Davis-Weber counties this morning now in Salt Lake County. So far, it appears that Utah County is skating this, but one of our texters, Dave, 3.5 hours from Logan to 1300 South in Salt Lake City.
Totally unsurprising. Completely and totally unsurprising. Again, when I was driving in, you couldn't see the lines. Everybody is just creeping along at a snail's pace. And it was still moving relatively well for me. About 15 minutes later, after I got in, it was a complete parking lot.
Of course, the story is also developing at our ski resorts in the mountains. 763 inches total to date at Brighton Ski Resort. 60 inches in the last 7 days. And they're not alone. The full report on that straight ahead.
David DeGenovic. David DeGenovic. Special coverage of the top local story.
As I was starting to say, Dave and I want to go over some of the snow totals in the mountains. You got Snow Basin. Gets a Yeti share of the snow. 33 inches over the last 24 hours. I saw Brighton Ski Resort in Big Cottonwood Canyon. 60 inches in the last 7 days, Dave.
Yeah, it has been absolutely incredible. As I've been a skier, you know, my entire life, I like to look at the base. I like to know how much, you know, the base is. That really talks to, you know, the denseness. And we're looking at nearly 220 inches at Snow Basin. Just about every single place, every single ski resort in Utah has at least 100 inches. I think there's only two that are under 100 inches on the base, and, you know, it's like 95. So it has been an unbelievable ski season.
Alta Ski Resort, I just Googled their webpage, 750 inches and counting in bold font right as you Google their webpage. Let's bring in Craig Gordon, Utah Avalanche Center. This is insane, Craig. Scary. I mean, it'll certainly do a lot for our water supply, but in the meantime, there's some safety issues that we have to be thinking about.
Yeah, no doubt. Good morning, Dave and Dujanovic. it's sanity? Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it. But it's a beautiful insanity in that, because we have got Herculean snow amounts. You're just talking most resorts, 200 inches mid-mountain. And, you know, if we look at that for a season overall, we are really pushing the margins of 800 total inches of snowfall this year. And not only is that great news, but the snow waters, of course, they are Herculean as well. So that makes for fat white mountains tip to tail. We are talking from the ridgelines to mid elevations down to the valley floors. You already talked about some of the concerns in the Ogden Valley. 24 inches of snow overnight. I mean, remarkable. And if we look in a week span, anywhere from 40 to 60 inches of snow in just a week. So, of course, that is elevating the avalanche danger. And this is a statewide thing. So everybody got invited to that party. On a scale of 1 to 5, we register at a level 3. That means that human-triggered avalanches are likely in the Ogden zone. If you're headed out, even some low-angle snow on your snowmobile, it is going to be over the hood and over the head. 24 inches of snow, high avalanche danger. That means that natural avalanches get in on the mix as well.
This is where I'm very torn. I mean, this is the kind of snow that you're just begging for if you're a backcountry skier, if you're a snowmobiler. What do I do? How long do I have to resist the temptation?
Yeah, hey, great question there. Well, you know what you can do is you can enjoy the hard work of the women and the ski patrol and go enjoy one of our world-class resorts, where this storm actually lives up to the motto on our license plates. It's truly the greatest snow on earth right now. It's light. It's fluffy. Hey, if you're headed to upper elevations, remember that winds did pick up for a short time, and things are a little bit trickier than they would suggest. So any avalanche that is triggered today is going to break a little bit deeper and wider than you might expect. Even though we've got a strong snowpack, eventually there is going to be a weak hand in the mix that shows its cards. So the best thing to do, let's just pump the brakes for a little bit. We can still enjoy this amazing snow. We don't have to hide under the beds. If you want to get into steep terrain, again, hit one of our world-class resorts. If you're headed out into the backcountry, you can have a blast on low-angle terrain with no steep slopes above or adjacent to you. You remember your one-stop shop for all things avalanche, of course. It's Utah Avalanche Center.
Craig Gordon of the Utah Avalanche Center. Always love bringing your bright personality into the conversation on a day like today where people are trying to fight their way into the office. And I just did the math. If we do hit 800 inches of snowfall at one of the ski resorts for the season, that would be equal to 66.66 feet. That's an incredible amount of snow all in one season. Do you ever remember a season with this much snow?
You know, 83, 84 with 743. So actually, I'm psyched that you're crunching the numbers because I can remember snow and water numbers and avalanche statistics, but I can hardly, balance my checkbook.
I know, right?
But, well, so in that regard, math isn't my strong suit, but yeah, it is just a banger year. It's not only great for the state and the ski industry and the snow industry, it is going to make the water managers happy. And hopefully we just turn that thermostat up very slowly come spring.
We appreciate you taking the time. Craig Gordon with Utah Avalanche Center. And as I look at UtahAvalancheCenter.org, Debbie, from Logan to Provo, every single area has a considerable avalanche rating, a considerable danger rating. And the Ogden area, so that's your Snow Basin, Nordic Valley, Powder Mountain area, that is all high danger ratings.
Want to hit our developing story once again, which is the traffic. Heather, oh, look at that. Legacy Parkway at a standstill. Did you get word that maybe UHP is trying to help drivers out of the way on Legacy right now?
Yeah. So what happened was about 2.5 hours ago or so, we had multiple vehicles that got stuck trying to get over I-15 on Legacy Parkway. That's where you'll connect back onto I-15 up in Farmington. And so traffic was completely at a standstill. And now Highway Patrol, apparently, I haven't been able to see it on camera because the visibility is so bad up there. But apparently Highway Patrol vehicles are now trying to push cars off the road or up over the bridge to get them going because traffic is backed up like 8 miles on Legacy Parkway right now.
My goodness, what a mess. Thanks, Heather. Thanks for standing by for us in the traffic center.
Debbie, I was afraid that I may have spoken awkwardly when I was talking about the danger ratings. Ogden Canyon is a very high danger rating as far as backcountry skiing, snowmobiling, as far as the ski resorts themselves, Nordic, Snow Basin, Powder Mountain. Those are open and safe. But yeah, the backcountry areas have just gotten so much snow recently that, as Craig Gordon from Utah Avalanche Center just told us, just stay on the ski resorts for a little bit.
We are going to speak live to the Davis School District in the next conversation. They were a little bit, what would you say, behind the times, Dave, when it came to delaying versus remote learning, delayed versus remote. So Chris Williams of the Davis District is calling in live. I also, let's take, I'm not quite sure how to juggle all this. Is it phone calls? Is it texts? Let's start taking phone calls because this storm is not going anywhere. We got people stuck all over the place. I-15 is better than Legacy, but Legacy, you are a parking lot right now. So if it's safe to do so, 801-575-TALK, 801-575-TALK. Let us know where you are, what you're seeing, how much snow you have.
Brewing Utah Weather. Special coverage on KSL News Radio.
My goodness, the phone lines are lighting up. We've asked for your phone calls. You know, where are you stuck? What are you seeing? Joe, Dave, has been stuck in traffic on Legacy Highway. We are looking at a camera right now, a UDOT traffic camera, and Legacy is a parking lot right now.
All right, Joe, give us an idea. Paint a picture. What's it like?
I got to go to the bathroom really bad.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
I'm just saying, man, it's bad. I'm sitting behind two snow plows, and we're just started moving again. We just kind of like do these like 50 to 100-yard spurts, and then they stop for about 10, 15 minutes, and then they go another couple hundred yards and go again. And, yeah, it's just pretty much a whiteout. I can see about 200 or 300 yards visibility, and the snow has just been constant the whole time.
Wow.
So,
well,
what's the buildup look like? Because I'd heard that there's been like a couple of feet of buildup in some areas on Legacy Parkway.
Yeah, so it's interesting when I entered the Legacy Highway back off of 215, there was probably 2 or 3, 4 inches of snow, and now I'm almost to the, I can see I-15 to the right, and I think I'm getting close to the bridge. I just can't see. I see a lot of trucks and semis, but like you said, it's been constant snow, and we just stopped now, and I see nothing but semis and trucks ahead of me, and I heard that they're trying to push cars with other highway patrol vehicles over the bridge, and so I'm going, great, this is going to be, so I might have to just get out of the car and say, sorry, I got to go.
Oh, Joe, thanks for calling. Stay safe out there. Wendy, let's get to you real quick. You just passed Legacy Highway. What are you seeing?
I did. I'm actually heading southbound. It's completely stopped northbound on Legacy because I'm on I-15. You can see it's completely stopped, but hope for the one that just called. When I passed Legacy, passing Farmington Station there by Lagoon, they were actually moving. Traffic was moving. Getting on to Legacy from I-15 southbound was totally fine, but northbound is the one that's totally packed. So they're completely stopped right now as I'm continuing. Well, I'm only doing about 30 driving southbound. I'm almost to Parish Lane, almost to Parish Lane. And we're doing about, I'm up to 40 now, but it's been constant snow. I left Caseville about 20 minutes ago, and we've got over a foot of snow there that we've got over the night.
Well, best of luck. Thanks for calling, Wendy and Joe. Best luck. It can be overwhelming. I was actually driving. That was my alternate route. I took Legacy Parkway into Salt Lake. When I got a phone call, Debbie, from the Davis School District, this was about, 6:30 in the morning, and they said it was delayed, which shocked me. I was very, very surprised that they had just delayed, because I couldn't imagine having school today. And then it seems like a couple hours later, they decided to do remote learning.
Right. Chris Williams of the Davis School District live on the line. Dave felt like this was the death of the snow day until he got a phone call as we were walking in studio to start the show that said, you're going to remote learning. Why the delay in the decision or the change of plans?
Well, thank you for having me on. I know I've told you before, I'm from Buffalo. I'm starting to feel like this is just like Buffalo. We didn't necessarily think this accumulation was going to continue. So that's why we did the 2-hour late start. As it continued to just accumulate, we had our plow driver saying, we can't get ahead of this. And so we continued to meet, and we said, you know what? We have the ability to go remote. Let's go remote. So that's what we did, trying to keep everyone safe, especially our students and our teachers. We had the ability to make the decision in a way that gave us a little bit of time because of that 2-hour late start. But because of that accumulation, we said, let's just go remote. So that's what we're doing today.
So what are some of those determining factors as you decide whether or not to shut things down for the day?
Well, first thing, we have to figure out, are we going to hold school? And we said, no, there's no way. Let's go 2-hour late start. So we sent out that message, and we're moving in that direction. And then as we continue to get information from our plow drivers, from the forecast, from people out there traveling the roadways, we just said, you know what, we're having a real struggle. Let's do remote. So that's what we do. It's just a progression. And the more information we have, the better that we could make decisions with. So that's exactly what we did. And as always, we always tell parents, if you feel conditions are too bad, just keep your child at home and we'll work with your child to make sure we are flexible and letting them make up any work that they miss. So no matter what the conditions are, whether we go 2-hour late start or remote, we always let the parents know that they are in the driver's seat for the safety of their own kiddos.
Are we too hesitant to use remote learning?
I don't know. This is a historic day. This is the first time we've used remote learning in Davis School District.
I guess maybe that's a little bit my point, Chris, is this has been the snowiest year ever in Utah. It's just been incredible. And there's been a few days where I've scratched my head. I thought, you know, remote learning was supposed to be this incredible opportunity, you know, where we could still educate kids, you know. But it does feel to me, at least as a dad in the Davis School District, that we're a little too hesitant to go remote learning.
Well, all I can say is we're now doing remote learning today. So I'm glad I can bring humor to you. You know, our number one objective is to educate kids. And we know that if we have to make up a day, no one's going to show up. So we do everything we can to make sure that we give students an opportunity to get educated, whether it's a 2-hour late start or remote learning.
Yeah.
So I appreciate everything you do to communicate that vital information to our parents, letting them know that, yeah, we had a little change and we decided to go remote learning.
Chris Williams of the Davis School District. Yeah, thanks for jumping off the line. And yeah, you did call it this morning about 9 o'clock as we were starting the show. It was going to be a remote learning day in the Davis District. I'm looking at KSLNewsRadio.com right now. Weber District, Morgan County, Ascent Academy in Farmington, and a couple of others. You can check out the full list there. All on delayed start, as far as we know. Of course, we'll keep you posted if any changes are made.
Yeah, and again, we expect this to taper off a little bit during, the noon time and a little bit early afternoon. But right now, it's still coming down hard.
Yeah, but I know Maria will have this covered during the noon hour, and of course, Jeff Kaplan this afternoon all over this storm and the next one as well during his show.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news.
Heather Kelly, are you still standing by in the traffic center for us?
I am with you.
Hi. So Dave and I are in studio here. And Dave, where's that camera pointed at?
Yeah, we got a text that said, oh, there's all sorts of accidents on I-215. Can you give us a little bit of an update? It looks like there might be a few collisions or crashes that are going on there.
Yeah, there's just been so many crashes that I just can't even talk about most of them during our traffic report. But right now, I think the one they're talking about, we have some reported on northbound I-215, the West Belt, right around 3500 South in West Valley. Now, the roads there do not look like snow is sticking to them, but they're definitely wet. Visibility is reduced a little bit. And so the roads are pretty slick. If you have tires that are a little bit bald or you're going too fast for the conditions, it's going to be really easy to slide out.
Heather, before we let you go, how is Legacy looking for our folks who called in earlier to say they'd been sitting in traffic there for about 2 hours?
Yeah, I think they're going to be sitting there for another hour, maybe. Sort of moving. But, you know, the problem is if UHP is having to move cars individually, one right after another off the road, that takes time. So, you know, you might move forward one car length and then you have to wait for another car to get moved and then you move forward a car length. So, yeah, nobody's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, well, and some of this is just circumstantial. I know that the weather really hit up there pretty hard this morning. Thanks, Heather, for jumping on the show with us, as you always do. Heather Kelly in the Traffic Center. I really... I'm looking forward to our coverage this afternoon as well. Jeff Kaplan, of course, on the air from 3 to 7, because he, I know, will have the look ahead for the days ahead. We're not out of this yet. Winter-like conditions predicted all week long. I really want to get somebody on the air, because Heather mentioned bald tires. They don't mix. They don't do much for you at all in conditions like this. So I want to know how we can tell if our tires are bald without lifting them up on a jack and walking under them. So hopefully this week you and I can muster up a contact on that, Dave, and talk about that on the air.
There is a quick hack, and it's a penny hack.
I know. I've done that before.
I can't remember. It's like you put the penny in, and if it reaches Lincoln's head, then it's deep enough. I can't remember what it is. Go ahead and Google it. But there's an easy life hack.
So here's the problem with the penny hack that I found. My tires are balding on the back, and they're balding on the inside.
Yeah.
And so I would have had to crawl under and look to know for sure. And in fact, right after the show, you know where I'm driving? To the tire shop. But I do want to talk more about that as we talk about traffic safety in the days ahead.
Right on the money. Special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
Let's talk layoffs. And a surprising twist that we have found behind the headlines, it's not getting a lot of coverage. So we know tech is taking it in the teeth, right? Amazon, 9,000 layoffs last week. I think that's in addition to other layoffs. Microsoft, 10,000. There is another industry in Utah besides tech that seems to be struggling, Dave.
Yeah, this will be interesting because at least from the tech sector, they've made it sound like, hey, this is fine. This is normal. We had a huge hiring boom during COVID, and now we're just, you know, reducing to an appropriate, sustainable size. But yeah, I mean, at some point, if this is happening in other industries as well, do we need to start worrying a little bit?
Well, let me give you a hint of where the trouble is and what we're going to talk about more in depth in just a moment with Nate McDonald of Workforce Services. The hint of troubles started last year when, you know, CNN reporting home sales in the U.S. went down for the 10th straight month in a row. That was late last year. Of course, mortgage rates were up, so that slowed things. KSL TV, kind of tag teaming with the CNN coverage, reporting late last year that Salt Lake City area was taking 51 days for a home to sell compared to 27 days a year earlier. So you know where I'm going with this. You know what industry you can kind of – I'm foreshadowing what other industry we have to worry about here in Utah.
Nate McDonald joins us right now from Workforce Services. You're the deputy director there, Nate. And all right, who's being hit hardest by these mortgage rates?
Yeah, definitely. You know, let me set it up. Great setup, by the way. We measure 10 private sectors industry groups every month in our employment summary that we send out, and we just published it on Friday, and we measure them to see where their job growth is. So 9 out of the 10 major private sector industries are seeing positive job gains in our latest February report. But there's one that has not for now several months, pretty much since you just talked about those mortgage rates going up, and that is the financial activities industry. And that industry really has been our greatest hit industry for this last year, even more than the tech industry. And the tech industry kind of took the spotlight from the finance industry there towards the end of 2022 because so many layoffs were being announced, and we're still hearing some nationally. But locally, we saw the tech jobs, they're in our professional business service sector, take a hit at the end of the year, and they were seeing negative losses. But they've actually bounced back at the start of this year.
Wow. So tech is picking up steam while the financial services is losing some ground.
Yeah, and what we've really seen is that we're definitely acknowledge that there's been some layoffs in the tech industry,
sure.
But because we're seeing growth in other sectors, we've just seen those jobs be absorbed elsewhere. But in the financial activities, that's not the case just because, well, the interest rates are what they are, and there's no sign of that changing anytime soon.
Who else is included in that financial activities?
So, yeah, you're talking the real estate industry, obviously the loan, financial, mortgages, banking, credit unions, all of those different type of groups fit into that financial activities. Also insurance, rental and leasing. And so really, if you just look at it from a finance standpoint, the housing, real estate, rental, all of that fits in financial activities. And that's what's been hit the hardest over the last year. We're seeing the number is 2,200 jobs fewer in that industry since February of 2022.
Nate McDonald, Deputy Director of the Department of Workforce Services, live on the line, delivering some sobering news if you work, in the mortgage industry, the real estate industry. Top tip, Nate, for someone who has been laid off living in Utah, what's the first thing they should do or the most important thing they should do?
Well, here's the real positive amongst all that is that nine of the other industries are still seeing positive job growth. So that means there's jobs just in different industries. And so what we encourage people to do is to look at the skills you have in that industry. Let's take like a loan processor, right? Loans were booming a year ago. Now they're not. So probably we have a lot of loan processors who may not be working that industry anymore. But there's still a lot of processing jobs out there, just not with loans. For example, we just hired a bunch of people, Department of Workforce Services, a bunch of application processors. So it's like, where can you take the skills you've learned but apply them in a different industry sectors? The other thing here is in our labor exchange, we do show a lot of the types of jobs that are in the financial sector, but when you spread them across those other industries, they still need accountants, they still need clerks, they still need financial managers. So look for those other industries and really try to narrow your searches a little bit more to still find what you do, but do it in a different industry. And that's one of the best tips we can give right there.
Nate McDonald, thank you for joining us from Workforce Services.
Yeah, we'll compile all of Nate's information, make sure it lands on our webpage, kslnewsradio.com. And that is really one-stop shopping for everything we talk about on the radio station throughout the day, including school closures, the crazy weather that we've been having. Of course, we're continuing to track that from the newsroom with our team of reporters and producers who are keeping an eye not only on the traffic cameras, but certainly on the skies as well. Straight ahead, we had an officer-involved shooting in Sandy over the weekend. A man is dead, and we're going to talk about what happened and bring KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas into the conversation next.
Dave and DeGenevieve.
Well, you just heard Tim talking about that officer-involved shooting, and we're going to go more in depth right now with KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas. According to the Sandy Police Department, Sergeant Greg Moffitt, speaking to KSL 5 TV, they said a 33-year-old man, they were called to the scene over the weekend, apparently having some sort of a mental health crisis, possibly suicidal.
Something took place where the subject presented an immediate threat to our officer, and unfortunately that those actions were met with deadly force from our officer, who discharged his firearm and hitting the subject, who was pronounced deceased at the scene.
And I think this brings up a conversation that we've been struggling with really as a nation right now, is trying to figure out how to best handle folks that are going through a mental health crisis, if they are possibly suicidal. You know, what is the best way to treat that individual? And the Salt Lake Police Department has employed several full-time mental health professionals to try to address some of these issues. Now, that's not every police department. Not every police department has that kind of resource available. You know, Salt Lake Police Department is extremely large, so not surprising that they have more resources. I don't know what Sandy has.
Yeah, Greg Skordas, our KSL legal analyst. Good morning. This is, you know, there are many questions that are unanswered at this point. I did see video. KSL 5 TV had video, looked like from a witness from a distance. And I could only see one police officer in that video. I might have missed other officers on scene, But why don't you help walk us through, from your perspective, how police should be responding to, or police departments should be responding to, a mental health crisis?
Well, I mean, that's a really difficult question, yeah. Debbie, and one that we all need to address better. And by the way, Sandy Police Department is a fairly good-sized police department, as Utah agencies go. They're very well trained. And we're doing more and more, it seems like, in this country to deal with police response to the mentally ill, police response to, for example, difficult domestic violence situations and things like that, drug reactions. And that's sort of what police reform has all been about over the last couple of years. But the Sandy sergeant that you quoted here uses the words immediate threat several times, which is sort of buzzwords, I think, for him to justify the officer's use of deadly force at that time, notwithstanding the potential mental illness of the victim.
Greg Skordas is our KSL legal analyst. Now, Greg, I was reminded recently of one of those situations where police responded to a call, but a healthcare professional came along with the officers. And as they were interacting with the individual, the person in crisis reaches for a gun. The police officer literally has to shove the mental health care worker out of the way to protect them. I mean, this is where I look at it and I say, I understand what we're trying to do, but I am also concerned about bringing civilians or bringing people that are not law enforcement into these situations that can be extremely dynamic and extremely dangerous.
And you're exactly right, Dave. And it's also a matter of resources. It's really hard to have mental health professionals available and at the ready when police are on these situations. I mean, even this one, if by all accounts, it happened very quickly. It wasn't really something that was expected. And although Sandy City probably has mental health coordinators and mental health people that can help their law enforcement, there may not have been that availability, both with respect to the timing of it all and just the fact that it happened so quickly. I don't know, right now we sort of have to give the police the benefit of the doubt until the investigation is finished. But something happened that this agency feels their officer was justified in using deadly force.
We're talking live right now to KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas. You often hear him at night from 7 to 9 at KSL at Night, one of our newer shows we're very, very proud of. And Greg, we appreciate you always be your willingness to jump into these conversations a little earlier in the day. And you, when you talk about resources being available or at the ready for a mental health counselor to be on a ride along with a police officer or at the station at 1 o'clock in the morning, which is when close to the time that this officer involved shooting happened this weekend in Sandy, that just does not seem realistic given the the finite resources for mental health professionals that we experiencing on a day-to-day basis, just trying to get into an appointment ourselves. So I can see your point that maybe they weren't available at that time if they do have a mental health counselor on staff.
Yeah, and that the same probably would have been true for even some of our larger agencies. I mean, they're just not readily available all the time. I mean, they're certainly available telephonically, I suppose, to law enforcement, but that may not have been a realistic mm-hmm. possibility or availability for this officer to utilize at the time. And we don't know really what happened that spooked the officer and made him or her feel that the immediate threat was there and that the use of force was justified. But certainly there's going to be a lot of investigation that goes on by the county attorney's office.
And practically speaking, I don't think most of us understand how many phone calls police get and how many times they go out and get dispatched on a nightly basis. I mean, this is an 8-10 hour shift, and sometimes they don't even have time to grab lunch. They're just going from call to call to call to call.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize what this does to the officer. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, you know, he's in use of force and somebody was killed. But these officers, and Debbie understands this as well as anybody, really suffer long-term consequences from these things because, like you say, Dave, they're on the ready, but sometimes, you know, they leave their house, they have their dinner, whatever, and all of a sudden they're involved in a situation that you and I couldn't even begin to understand how to deal with and pull a weapon.
Greg, before we let you go, by the way, this Greg Scordis, we're speaking to him about an officer-involved shooting that happened in Sandy over the weekend. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. The 33-year-old man dead in that officer-involved shooting. Greg, I want to talk to from the family's perspective, though. If they did call and they were looking for help with a mental health crisis, often families don't know where to turn. Maybe they've turned other places and the issue has not, you know, resolved itself. And so they turn to the police department and now they have, you know, a brother or a son or nephew who's dead. And I do worry that when these situations are not de-escalated where somebody can get into mental health therapy, that, you know, when somebody ends up dead, it just sends a message to other families that they get concerned that, you know, if they call cops, is that what's going to happen to their loved one?
You're exactly right. And I think that the nature of the call will certainly be scrutinized, Debbie. And in fact, if the call did come in that this young man was mentally ill and had some serious issues, you would have expected that Sandy City, that the responding officers would have taken that into account when they confronted him. And we don't know what the call was, how it first came out, or what the immediate threat was. But certainly, if they were alerted, if police were alerted that this was a mental health crisis, you would have expected them to take that into account before they did what they did.
Greg Scordis, thank you for joining us, KSL legal analyst.
I know this is a story that we will be tracking throughout the day, not only on Maria's new newscast, but as well later in the day from 3 to 7 with Jeff Kaplan as we learn more details with our team of reporters and producers who are checking into this as more information comes to light on what the nature of the call was, you know, what this individual was doing at the time that concerned the officer enough to fear for his life and pull the trigger. So many more questions. Our team has you covered throughout the day. Straight ahead, we're going to go right on the money about the number one reasons couples fight. It's not the in-laws, Dave.
Right on the money. Special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
Number one reason couples fight. Is it the in-laws?
Nope.
Is it
infidelity?
Is it the outlaws? Nope. Money.
Yeah. Surprising 0% of married people.
You think? I thought it was going to be the in-laws.
No. No, are you kidding? Nothing compares to money fights.
All right, pull up to the kitchen table. Now that we're starting to hopefully get through traffic, the crazy weather, of course, we're still keeping an eye on that. We're going to talk about some family financing. Finances and how often should you talk about them?
Are you familiar, because I know you love acronyms, the DTR?
No.
Define the relationship. Like, how often should we DTR our finances?
Okay.
Is this a once a year sit down with your spouse, go over the budget, the numbers? Is it quarterly? Is it monthly? Or is it like weight loss, where you should get on that scale every single day to hold yourself accountable?
And track where you're at.
Yeah. Hey, what did you spend on today? Or is that just the worst?
We have a live conversation in just a moment with somebody who knows a lot about relationships. Let's set it up. Joint bank accounts. Let's start there. How do you feel about those? Because Bankrate, which is, we talk to Bankrate a lot on this show because they've got lots of great advice. They track all the numbers. They just revealed 43% of married adults in the United States have a joint bank account. Only 43%. That means the rest of y'all are flying solo in the bank account.
Well, it's interesting because the only have a joint bank account is they don't have backups. They don't have one for you and one for me and a joint bank account as well. It's That's what they run off of. Almost half of America only has a joint bank account. Now, my wife and I tried this. All the money in one pot, the expenses come out of that pot, the fun comes out of that pot. I would throw a stick of dynamite into that pot and just destroy everything because I was a little bit of an outlaw.
It seems like the newlywed millennials are the ones that are choosing to keep the separate bank accounts.
Yeah.
New research found that couples who combine their financial resources are actually happier than those who don't.
I think one of the big benefits of combining finances, at least what I found from my experience with my husband, is that we don't have to really worry about the fairness too much or who's paying for what, because it all comes from our common joint bank account.
That's personal financial expert Kimberly Palmer. Obviously, she has a joint bank account with her husband.
Joining us right now is Dave Schramm, a professor at Utah State University, family life extension specialist. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
Okay, let me start off with this. How often should we have the financial DTR, the define the relationship with our spouse and crack down on the finances?
Yeah, let me first say, it's kind of like asking how many times should I use the restroom each day, right? It depends on how many times I need to. But that said, right, some couples married a long time. Maybe it's every few months. If you're a younger couple, it may be a check-in brief discussion several times per week. But I'm going to say I recommend at least once a month to reconcile. You know, we reconcile using Quicken or another system that works for you to sit down. And we just sit down right next to each other, my wife and I, have the computer open. We go through, hey, where are we at? But it may depend on how many times you get paid per month, right? We get paid once. But the simple answer is it just depends on how many times you feel like you need to have that discussion. If one person feels like they need to, then you need to have it.
Okay, David, here's the problem. These things can start marital fights, right? These kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. So you say that like you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep,
and a lot of finger pointing, and then someone leaves the room upset. How do we avoid that?
Okay, you need to almost set it like a timer, right? These money dates, they need to be brief, ideally about 20 minutes. And you need to stick to the points and avoid any kind of old arguments, because it can feel threatening. It makes us defensive. Don't have these late at night. Have these when you're okay. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about this. It's going to be a short, let's briefly discuss this, because really what's underlying this is this need of, you know, what does money mean? It's not money. What is it? Does it mean safety? Is it fun? Is it about connection? And so you really need to kind of stick with the points and don't get off track.
I love that. Don't have this conversation with you when you're tired, hangry, agitated. That makes all the sense
in the
world.
Or in the bedroom. I'm just going to throw that out there. Mm. This is just me. Do not have this conversation as your
place.
Yeah.
Yep.
Don't bring
place.
It into the bedroom.
Okay. So what if there really is an impasse where you can't agree on a spending plan or accountability? What do you do if you just genuinely cannot resolve the problem?
Yeah, if you really are feeling stuck, I mean, people do. They go to counselors. They go to, you know, a second party. Don't go to your family and friends and say, hey, what do you think? That's not a good place to go. But I recommend really trying to understand the person, and that takes compassion. You don't have to agree with them now, but at least try to understand their perspective on why they feel so strongly about. Can we come back, you know, tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening or something? Just give me more time to really think about it, because understanding is so much part of the situation, the solution.
And David, this is part of your podcast, or you're talking money this week?
It is. Yeah. In fact, we just released our episode. It's on KSL Podcast on Stronger Marriage Connection. And we talk about tackling money in marriage. We talk about five money personalities. And so if people are interested, they've got to listen to this episode.
All right. Dave Schramm, Utah State University Family Life Extension Specialist. Always appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for jumping on the line with us. And I'll be listening to that podcast.
I think I know what my financial personality is. Butch Cassidy. Jesse James, a little bit of an outlaw, kind of edgy, want to do my own thing, don't want to play by the rules.
Oh, you're out there freelancing.
I freelance. Uh-huh. I freelance. And that's something that I've struggled with over the years. I don't make big purchases. I'm not going to come home with a boat or a new car.
Oh, that's what you call a big purchase? I think anything over $100 is a big purchase.
Okay, even that. But I will nickel and dime you to death with, I went to a movie here, extra popcorn, went out to eat lunch, stuff like that.
I think I just hit on something, though. You were looking at big purchases as a boat or a car, and I'm thinking anything over $100. That's how I think.
$100.
$100. Yeah, that's a
rounding error is what you're looking for.
Run to Costco, isn't it? Let's get calls from our listeners as we continue to monitor any traffic troubles. Looking at the camera on Legacy Parkway, they're still slow, slow, slow. We had one caller just not too long ago, about an hour ago, tell us he'd been sitting in that mess on Legacy for over 2 hours. We will jump out to the traffic center, get the latest, also taking your live phone calls. How often do you DTR your finances with your partner? What does DTR stand for again?
Define the relationship.
Is it daily? Is it monthly? Is it yearly? Okay, and if it's never, I really want to talk to you. 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK. Taking your live calls next.
Right on the Money. Special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
Continuing to go on in depth on our coverage about defining your finances with your spouse, setting goals, and how to have that conversation. We just hung up the phone with David Tram of Utah State University, and the tip I'm really focused on, and he said, set a timer when you're having that conversation with your spouse. That conversation should be no more than 20 minutes. But also every couple is going to be different on how often they have that conversation.
Yeah, there were a few really interesting tips that he had. Again, that he called it a money date. You should have a money date. Date night. How much fun. Let's talk about money.
It's like speed dating, though, if it's only 20 minutes and then the timer goes off.
Well, I think what happens, and this was the point that Mr. Schramm was making, was it prevents you from diving too deep into past problems, right? You don't want to go back and say, well, you remember 10 years ago when you got that gym membership that we held on for 5 years and you never went once? You know, you don't want to bring that up because that's just going to start a fight. You know, you want to keep it in the here, the now. What are we doing? I wonder, though, and we're taking your phone calls, 801-575-TALK. Do you dare have this conversation daily? Or even multiple times a week where you're like, hey, how did you do today? Like what did you spend on? Where we kind of keep each other accountable. Or is that just begging for a fight?
I think once a day is too much. It's too often. I think once a week is perfect. I like to have these conversations on a Sunday night before you head to bed, at the kitchen table, and after the kids go to bed, so they don't need to be around that. Not little kids. As they get older, maybe invite them into the conversation. But I think it's a good way to reset where you were over the last week, where you've been, and where you're going over the course of the next several days.
Unsurprisingly, I think it's the number one fight, right? It's not in-laws. It's not infidelity. You're everyday fight, the fight that is most common is about money in your relationship. And I can't say I'm surprised. I would say that's probably 90% of our disagreements in my marriage.
Before we get to phone calls, Kate Davis, and for the newsroom, you've got some breaking news for us.
Yeah, Dave and Deb, we have some breaking news out of Nashville, Tennessee. We're learning this morning that at least 3 children and the gunman are dead in a school shooting. We learned just within the last hour or so about this shooting, but we know the gunman has been killed by police. We don't have the condition on the other children, but we've heard there have been multiple injuries. Still no word on exactly how many, but we do know from multiple media outlets that at least 3 children have died. This is at the Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee. Again, the suspect is dead, but those 3 children have died. And we're sure that there are more people injured. Just still no word on the exact number there.
Wow. Thanks.
CNN is reporting multiple patients at a local hospital. Kate Davis, thank you for the update.
I'm just, I've got CBS News pulled up here. Thanks again, Kate. As Kate reported, the gunman is reported dead by police. This shooting happened, as she said, at Covenant School, which looks like it's at or attached to the Presbyterian Church in Nashville, Dave. And the fire department saying there are multiple victims. A very active scene as well. Do we want to take CNN Live? I'm looking at CNN Live. They are covering this as breaking news. Is there a way we can dip into CNN? Gustavo's got it. He said,
"You're entirely right."
There we go. Let's see if we can take you there live.
Of kids from elementary school on up who are now, in some cases, adults who've grown up in this environment in which their schools are targets. Andy McCabe, Chief Charles Ramsey, Amber Walker, thank you for all of that. And we have a lot more on this breaking news story straight ahead. Alex Marquardt will pick up our coverage right after a quick break. Stay with.
All right. Well, we just dipped in a little bit too late there, but we are looking at video now. Fox News over the scene with looks like a chopper, lots of police cars. Hard to tell exactly if they're gathering outside the school or what is going on in terms of the people who are inside the school, the students or the teachers from that angle. But you can see in the video from the ground level that it does look like police are addressing maybe parents who are pulling up in cars to figure out what is going on there.
Let's listen in to Fox News for a moment.
Can I say something, Harris? 10 months ago was Uvalde, mm-hmm. Robb Elementary, and that is in my mind right now. And you know, you mentioned earlier, we're still learning details. We're still finding out what has transpired there in Nashville. And I keep thinking about what we did learn about Uvalde and about Robb Elementary and these innocent lives that are lost. And my heart is breaking for those parents right now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Murray?
There are too many names we've had to learn of elementary schools, of houses of worship. Ari, you mentioned Jewish facilities. Think of Tree of Life Synagogue in Philadelphia. I mean, we have seen...
In Pittsburgh.
We have seen over and over again places that should be places of grace and protection, schools, hospitals, houses of worship, have to arm themselves. And that is part of the saddest part of all of this is that they keep happening in our country. And we learn these names. And we'll, as Kaylee said so beautifully, we will learn the stories of these children whose lives were lost. And I'm sick of having to learn stories of children's lives who were cut short. Of worshipers whose lives were cut short. I'm sick of it.
It is our responsibility to know their stories, not just as reporters and co-hosts, but also as Americans. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are young lives cut short, and their stories will always be special in our hearts. We don't know their names yet. We don't know really much about the school other than what you were telling us, Kaylee, on the website. And I know I've been reading through all of the local news coverage there now. I mean, this and then,
we
of course,
we are actually learning
Senator,
a little bit
Senator
more
Senator
back
Blackburn's
here in studio about the Covenant School in Nashville. I'm just on their website. 2001 is when it was founded. 33 teaching faculty, between 195 and 210 students enrolled. That's the average there. The student-to-teacher ratio, Dave, is something that's practically unheard of. Of course, this is it seems as though this could be a private school, a Presbyterian school. We'll continue to look for that information. 8-1 is the student-to-teacher ratio there. It looks like they focus on things like art, the Bible, library, music, STEM classes, world culture as well.
Yeah, I'm also reading from an ABC News report that this school is primarily for preschool through sixth grade.
And as last report, three children dead in that school shooting in Nashville. And what were their, what are the age, what's the age range? Preschool? To
yeah, sixth yeah, grade? Pre through sixth grade.
Of course, last week we were on the show, Dave, when we began getting news of a shooting at a high school in Denver, the Denver area, just coming off that, we just got the breaking news from the newsroom that there was an active shooter in a Nashville.
Our roof got
school,
damaged.
And that shooter is dead, just like what happened in the Denver area to the active shooter there in Denver, pronounced dead a short ways from the school there. Kate stuck her head back in. She ran out into the newsroom, stuck her head back in moments ago and said ABC News is going to take us live to a news conference in about the next 15 minutes or so. We will take you there live, of course, as we always do, the moment it happens.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news.
Gustavo, our producer, just got in my ear, Dave, and said WSMV in Nashville is now reporting there are additional fatalities in that school shooting at the Presbyterian private school in Nashville, Tennessee. We were reporting earlier that three children were dead.
I'm seeing the same report from WSMV. They are reporting that two adults also are dead.
Let's dip into News Channel 4's coverage out of Nashville right now.
Two adults have died, and we just heard that was confirmed through gunshot wounds, unfortunately.
All right, let's touch base with Courtney. She's been watching the scene for us as we continue to see parents who have clearly left work, dropped everything to get straight to their children. Mm-hmm. Courtney, walk us through the latest from the scene there.
Yeah, as you mentioned, a lot of people dropped everything that they were doing today to get to this school. One of them was the family of a teacher at this school. We just interviewed her daughter, and we're working to turn that sound for you so you guys can hear from her directly. But I can summarize the conversation. She says that her mom has been a teacher at this school, a pre-K teacher, for 10 years. And she texted her husband this morning and told him, there's an active shooter at the school. Tell the kids that I love them. Can you imagine that being your spouse or your mother texting your family to tell them that she loved you, knowing that there is an active shooter at her place of work? I think of my own mom, and I just don't have words. The teacher, her mother, she said that her and her kids ran into the closet. They hid. They heard several gunshots. She described it as popping off all around the school. Couldn't tell where they were coming from. Couldn't tell if they were next. But thankfully, the woman that we spoke with, she says that her mom touched base with her to let her know that she and her children did make it out of the school alive. But you can only imagine the trauma that they've experienced this morning and that they are going to continue to grapple with, especially knowing now that two adults are confirmed dead, the shooter is dead, and three children are dead. It's absolutely, absolutely heartbreaking. But the woman that we spoke with says that her mother was just thankful, obviously, that they made it out alive. And she said that she is holding those children so tight on the bus ride to the reunification center, at that center, while she waits for their parents to pick them up, take them home. And we know that the teacher's family is so thankful that she is coming home this afternoon. We know that's not the case for everyone at this school today.
Such imagery in that story,
Holly,
too. Imagery in that story, too, Courtney, as you describe what she experienced hiding in that closet with children as gunfire erupted all around her. You're live on the scene, and we see that we've got armed officers who are essentially lining the road there. Heavy police presence as this area is blocked off for what we would perceive as the unfolding investigation. How many crews, if you're still with us, Courtney, are you able to see in that general vicinity?
So there's definitely still several police cars on scene. There's two trucks that indicate that the road is closed. There's a lot less traffic in and out of here than there was about an hour ago. Most of the traffic coming in and out now is law enforcement. We have seen SWAT team members in the woods along the road here coming out of the bushes, fully armed. And so this is still a very, very active scene. However, we really haven't seen any more parents coming to this area. It's really just law enforcement. I think you can see some officers walking towards us now. But closer to the school, there's obviously a much higher law enforcement heightened law enforcement presence, several more units. We can't get to that vantage point to show you right now because Metro Police has asked us to take a step back. So we're respecting, you know, their wishes during this investigation. But I can tell you there's still a lot going on out here right now.
Well, earlier we were hearing Metro Police were saying, quote, all hands on deck. So this would be handled thoroughly. This would be handled appropriately. Everything from ATF, the TBI.
You're listening to live coverage out of Nashville, Tennessee. That's a television station. It's the Channel 4 reporter on the scene there at the school shooting. It's at the Covenant Presbyterian School. It's a private school there where an active shooter walked into the building today. Three students pronounced dead, two adults dead. Also, the shooter, according to police, has died as well. It's obviously, you know, an ongoing investigation. We just see clusters of parents look like they're driving up to the school now as we watch live footage from that school be fed to CNN and Fox. And just looks like, you know, they've set up a reunification center, but still certainly understandably a lot of chaos there.
Yeah, we're expecting an update from the police any minute now. We're maybe within the next 10 minutes or so to hear from the police. But, you know, this was a pre-K to sixth grade, small private school. It seems to be a religious school. And a very, again, when you said small, what was the ratio? There was like a teacher to student ratio that was just incredibly small.
According to the website, the school's website, it's 8-1. 8 students per teacher. So very small, Presbyterian affiliated, started in 2001. It says founded in 2001 as a ministry of Covenant Presbyterian Church. Not at all unusual for a church to be attached or a school to be attached to a church on the same grounds there, and we're looking at video now. It does look as though there's just a beautiful church building. Then about 195 to 200 students is their average enrollment, 210 students. And they said their enrichment courses include art, Bible, library, music, physical education, STEM, and world cultures. But as you pointed out, Dave, pre-K to sixth grade.
ABC News is speaking to Brad Garrett, a former FBI agent, is their consultant, and he covers crime and terrorism for ABC News. Let's listen in on Brad Garrett.
Sandra, let's jump back to our Southeast Bureau and John Serry, who's been working his sources and has an update for us. John, it looks like what you reported the last time you were with us a few minutes ago about an additional 2 people being deceased as a result of the shooting has now been confirmed.
That has been confirmed, Vanderbilt University.
Actually, it looks like they moved on from Brad Garrett, Debbie. But as we continue to follow this story, we're getting live coverage. All the networks are following this live as it unfolds.
What we don't know is we obviously don't know yet who the active shooter is, was. We don't know how many, although we're hearing multiple injuries, multiple people shot. We do know from police that 2 adults are now confirmed deceased in addition to the shooter and also 3 kids. We also know that Nashville Police Department any moment now is going to be updating us a news conference on what they know, how the investigation will unfold. And we will take you to that news conference the moment we see the chief of police or an officer who's been designated to speak about this step up to the microphone. We're going to take you live to that news conference that's just started. Nashville Police Department addressing the shooting at a school there, an elementary school that took the lives of 3 children and 2 adults. Let's listen in.
The story of the school began clearing it. They heard shots coming from the second level. They immediately went to the gunfire. When the officers got to the second level, they saw a shooter, a female, who was firing. The officers engaged her. She was fatally shot by responding police officers. There was a 5-member team who was on the, that was on the second floor at that time, two individuals from that five-member team opened fire on the shooter. We know at this point that this shooter is a female. She appears to be in her teens, although her identification has not been confirmed at this juncture. We know that she was armed with at least two assault-type rifles and a handgun. We are efforting now to identify her. She entered the school through a side entrance and traversed her way from the first floor to the second floor, firing multiple shots. We now know that there are three students who were fatally wounded, as well as three adults inside the school. We are working to identify those victims, including the shooter. A total of seven persons were killed as a result of this morning's incident at the school. By 10:27, the shooter was deceased. The officers had engaged the shooter by 10:27, and she was deceased. Again, I said the first call came in at 10:13 this morning. We'll have more details to give you later in the morning. Chief Drake will be here in a bit. Now, Kendra Loney from Nashville Fire.
Fire department crews are dispatched for active shooter incidents as well, for medical support, but also for an RTF response, which is a rescue task force response to go in alongside of MNPD response. Our crews were right there on the scene to provide medical aid to any survivors, but also be there for victims so that we could try life-saving efforts in this case. So we went in as soon as it was safe for our responders to do so, to try to provide life-saving efforts for those that were impacted by this incident and this tragedy. Our crews were able to be on scene to pull out those that had viable signs of life, those that were still showing the option for to be saved. And we did make transport of three individuals and three children and then two adults that were taken from the scene. Our crews then set up a reunification unit. That reunification unit is at 2100 Woodmont Boulevard. That's where parents can go to be reunited with their children. All of the remaining students were able to be escorted out of the building with faculty and staff. We're not sure about the processes that they had in place, but we were on scene to help them mitigate anyone from.
You're listening to the latest. It was a live news conference out of Nashville, Tennessee. Three children, two adults dead in a school shooting. It's a private Presbyterian school. We got word that the shooter, the 911 call went in at 10:13, and by 10:27, the shooter was deceased. And in an I mean, just an unusual circumstance, the demographic of the shooter, a female, a teenager. Generally, most mass shooters are 97%, in fact, according to the Bureau of Statistics. Let me make sure that's right. That's not accurate. I'll get you that. But 97% are male. Ages range from usually 11 to 70, Dave, years old. The wow. Mean age is 34. This information comes to us by way of the National Institute of Justice.
And this female was carrying two assault-style rifles, a handgun. They just updated. It was three kids killed, three adults killed as well, three children wounded and taken to the hospital, and an additional two adults wounded and taken to the hospital.
Of course, Maria will have much more on this throughout her newscast this afternoon at noon to 1. And then if Jeff Kaplan, 3 to 7, will have much more information as the story continues to unfold throughout the day. That is the sound I'm listening to right now. Israel erupted in mass protests, almost a million people, they protesting, probably even more by now, all upset over Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to overhaul the judicial system in Israel.
Yeah, really weaken the country's Supreme Court. I read over the weekend that he fired his defense minister when that defense minister spoke out against his plan.
Professor Amos Giora, professor of law at the University of Utah, also formerly a lieutenant colonel with the Israeli Defense Forces. You are live on the line with us. Good morning. Are you in Israel? Are you here?
No, I am in Salt Lake City. My family is in Israel, super involved, super engaged, and here I am.
How significant is the prime minister's planned changes to the court system? Let's just start there so we can better understand what is angering Israelis.
The prime minister's, it's called reform, which is a whitewashing of the word reform. This plan is to, and by American standards, would be to eviscerate the independence of the Supreme Court, would significantly minimize any separation of powers and checks and balances, and make the what in America we would call the executive the supreme power, devoid of, free from judicial review. For a democracy, as we understand a democracy, that is 100% untenable, and that's the reason that there are hundreds of thousands of Israelis on a regular basis demonstrating. There are over 100,000 Israelis at outside the parliament in Jerusalem today. But literally as we're speaking, it's now 8:26 in the evening in Israel. There's now a counter demonstration from Netanyahu's supporters. And literally while waiting for you to finish the terrible Nashville story, Netanyahu has now announced that he, as he's so careful with him because honesty is not through, it doesn't run through his veins, is to, I don't know if we would say freeze, but to halt the judicial reform process. In exchange, however, he gave extraordinarily wide powers to our very, 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 very problematic minister of what we in English would call state security. Netanyahu has two people. Picture him holding two phones. In one cell phone, he's got President Biden. And in the other cell phone, he has his son and this minister of Homeland State Security. And he's caught in many ways by his own doing, caught in the middle, and clearly doesn't have a way out. In the meantime, Israel is totally stopped there, because remember, we're a socialist country in many ways. Public sector totally shut down. The airports are, you can't go in and out of Israel at the moment. Hospitals are shut down. There's no school, because this is the only issue that is relevant at the moment.
As you mentioned, one of those figurative phones being held to his ear was President Biden. What role does the United States play in this?
How much time do we have? Like an hour, five hours?
30 seconds. There you go. You can narrow it down into maybe give you a minute.
1 minute. So let's divide America into two. Let's divide America into the White House, and let's divide America, into three. The White House, the American Jewish community, and the American evangelical community. What President Biden needs to do is to make it very clear to Netanyahu, there will be no invitation to the White House until this madness stops, full stop. With respect to the American evangelical community, which has this complicated relationship or with Israel, or a loving relationship, or loving complicated, they totally need to back away and let us solve our problems without outside influence. And the same thing 100% applies to the American Jewish community, which needs to leave Israel to resolve its own issues without external interference, because at the end of the day, democracy versus fascism is an internal issue, a domestic issue, and that does not need external noise, full stop. That was 1 minute.
That was impressive. And it was basically, everybody stay out of our business. We're going to take care of this ourselves.
100%.
I did it in 15 seconds. I'm just saying.
Well, that's why you do. That's why you do what you do for a living, and why I teach. Right.
That's right. Well, Amos Giora, professor of law at the University of Utah, also formerly a lieutenant colonel with the Israeli Defense Forces, always appreciate you bringing us all the information that you have, and all your expertise as well into this conversation. This is another story we will keep our eye on very closely, as you just heard. Airports are shut down. Bus service is a mess, if it's even functioning. Hospitals are in trouble because nurses are planning to join this strike as well. Go ahead, Dave.
And very interesting that his recommendation from an insider, but also living here in the United States, his recommendation is the rest of the world needs to stay out of this while we figure it out here in Israel, and what and outside pressures will only worsen the situation.
I want to bring you a live update as we continue to cover breaking news out of Nashville, Tennessee, where a female active shooter, according to police, walked into a private Presbyterian school, pre-K through sixth grade, appeared to be in her teens. She is dead. And now national media organizations reporting three children dead, as well as three adults, which means that the death toll continues to rise at that scene there in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll turn it over to our newsroom now, where they have even more information next. Let's go back to Nashville, Tennessee, where that Presbyterian elementary school was the scene of just horror unfolding when an active shooter walked in. Phone call to 911 went out at 10:13 this morning. By 10:27, the female teen active shooter had been shot and killed by police, according to law enforcement. Rare that we hear of a female active shooter. In fact, the statistics show that over 97% of active shooters are male. But I mean, the fallout is very clear. We have three students in that school who are dead. And as well, we've just learned that three staff members were killed.
A deadly school shooting in Nashville, Tennessee. Authorities confirming a shooter is dead and three children were pronounced dead at a hospital, all from gunshot wounds suffered at the Covenant School, a private Christian school in Nashville. The school's website says it serves students pre-kindergarten through sixth grade.
We're still working to determine the ages of those children. You know, we know Metro Police killed the shooter, and parents are asked to go to Woodmont Church to meet their children. Earlier, we had crews there. They say that they saw children running down the street.
Reporter Allie Lynch with our ABC affiliate in Nashville, WKO.
We tuned in to a live report from WSMV out of Nashville, and one of the reporters recounted a story, had talked to a teacher who had been hiding in a closet with her students, and she had begun to send texts to her family, basically goodbye texts, tell my children I love them. Fortunately, she and her students, it sounds like,
pre-K-ers.
Were unharmed.
Pre-K-ers. They said that she ran and she hid them in a closet, and it was just a group of pre-K-ers, and that they loaded the bus to go to that meetup spot where the parents were, and she was just hugging those little kiddos so tightly on their way to the meetup spot. What a horrible situation in Nashville. This is a story we're going to continue to keep an eye on, of course, with our team of reporters and producers. I know Maria is prepping her newscast for noon. She will have more. I can guarantee you that this is a story that Jeff Kaplan will be focused on as well from 3 to 7.
Dave and DeGenevieve. Special coverage of the top local story.
Our local story, it's the blast of winter that just won't end. I know a lot of us are ready for winter to go away, but here we are right in the thick of it again, Dave. And you came in this morning to work about 7 o'clock. It's like, you look like you barely made it in.
Yeah, you're lucky it was 7 o'clock. It easily could have been 9 or 10 o'clock when you had the backups. I just missed a lot of the really terrible slowdowns, the slide-offs. But in Davis County, It was an absolute mess, though you came from the south part of the valley, and it wasn't too bad.
Smooth sailing. Kevin Eubank, KSL meteorologist. When we were on the show, we were getting text messages from our listeners in Utah County around Saratoga Springs. They're like, we don't know what in the world you all are dealing with out there, because it's sunny and blue skies in Saratoga Springs in Utah County. So I guess Mother Nature really picked her battles this morning.
Yeah, today was a unique storm. This was a lake effect storm that primarily went from just to the south of Ogden to about 33rd, maybe 45th south here in Salt Lake City, depending on how the band was swinging around. But First off, I knew that Debbie had had enough, so we let it go for her. Dave, you can never have enough, so we obviously kept it going for Dave. But I was out there. We shoveled 9 inches of snow overnight. I got 8 yesterday with the storm that hit Bountiful, and then another 9 today. So 17 inches on my lawn on top of what was literally bare lawn 4 days ago.
Is this just me, or does this feel like a long time to camp out for lake effect?
This was a long band, and this was a heavy band, and it definitely, I mean, canceled Davis County School District schools today, went remote learning because of this. They just couldn't keep up with it. It just kept coming and coming and coming. So, yeah, generally 12 to 18 hours is about a setup time for a lake effect event, so it wasn't unusually long. It just, the timing was such that it hit the early morning, came in on an overnight over a weekend. It was rough for sure. And anyone in that zone has been dealing with it. And anyone outside of that zone is saying, you guys are crazy. It's totally fine down here. And we're loving every bit of it. So,
Kevin Eubank, KSM meteorologist, always appreciate you jumping into the conversation. But it seems like you have been on the show more than we have been.
Stop it.
I mean, it's almost every week we're having these meetups. How many more hours do we have to endure this? And then what's the rest of the week look like?
So the good news is this little band right here, we've got another 2 to 3 hours. So it'll be done by 2 o'clock. It's just waning right now, very light. We call it snow globe snow out there right now. But it'll wane here after the noon hour and taper off by 1 or 2. The rest of the week is interesting. We've got another storm system that is coming in. It's going to actually come in Wednesday afternoon. It'll start as some rain and then go into Thursday where we'll see it change over to snow. And then there's another one coming Saturday afternoon into Sunday. And so, you know, we're going to finish the month of March just like we started with storms and roll into April. I want to give you a perspective because today we're actually breaking an all-time record for Salt Lake City. So for December to March period, which we call the snow season for us, we've had 60 stormy days in Salt Lake City. That is the all-time record going all the way back to 1874 for that time period. We've never had that many stormy days during December to March. And so it's crazy. It's unprecedented. We've never had, forget the totals, just the storm days. And so, yeah, I mean, that's 60 times on your show. I am talking on your show more than you guys are.
Thinking, that's
what's that all about?
If you compacted that, that would be 2 months straight
that's
of
right.
stormy
that's
weather.
Right. That's exactly right. Half of the period, because you've got 4 months there, half of it was stormy. Every other day, you had a storm. And that's just, it's unheard of. We've never had it before.
I saw over the weekend, we were celebrating 700 inches in the, you know, in Alta or Brighton. Is there a chance we could get to 800 inches?
Yes. Yeah, there is. Several more storms coming. Yes, the answer is yes. We don't see this very often. We've never had this kind of water in our mountains before. But we have had 800 inches of snow in a season before, Dave. So in the sense of water in the snowpack, it's an all-time record. But snow totals, we've had 800 before. So that wouldn't be an all-time record for us. It'd be close, but it wouldn't be all-time. And the difference is the density of the snow, right? The fluffier the snow, bigger snow totals, but not as much water.
Right.
And so in years past, we've had fluffier snow, and we've had an 800-year season before. But why are you talking like that, Dave? What are you trying to do?
Because he sits next to me all day long, and he knows I'm worried about one thing, and you know it too. I think it's time we stop celebrating all of this and start being more concerned about the potential for flooding. But I'm not the meteorologist that you are. I'm a faux meteorologist. So
Debbie, I love and admire and respect you, but let's be honest. You're more afraid of more than just one thing. I mean, let's just be honest. That happens to be today's thing
this
season's thing. But there's plenty other things that keep you up at night.
Come on, Kev. It doesn't keep you up at night that these temperatures warm up too quickly, come mid-April into May, and all of a sudden we're begging Mother Nature to, you know, slow the snow melt.
The truth is there's nothing we can do about that. So there's no reason to worry about it, but we can prepare.
Yes.
We really can prepare. So
that's true.
Take your preparation, sandbags at your property, clear the creeks and streams near you. Do everything you can do to try to help prepare your property for the potential of that. But I really do think, and looking at the climate models, I think we're going to warm up and then cool down and then warm up and then cool down. And I think we're going to bring it down okay. So that's my opinion. Wow. But we'll talk in another 30 days and you can say, Eubank, you're so full of, you know, you didn't know what you were talking about. No. But I really do believe we're going to have a measured melt off and we're going to be able to capture a lot of this water.
That would be glorious.
Kevin Eubank. Yeah. Thank you for joining us, KSL meteorologist. And as he said, Debbie, an all-time record. From December to March, we've had 60 stormy days. You can go back all the way to 1874 and not have that kind of, that's how long it's been recorded. Mm-hmm. And we broke the record, 60 stormy days. It has been incredible.
Well, we're feeling it in more ways than just in the mountains. We're feeling it on our commutes. They're very stressful. I'm actually glad that Kevin put that total down on paper for us, 60, because I thought it was just me. I was like, well, have we been through this kind of situation before? And I don't remember it. I don't remember white knuckling it this often into the office. I don't remember that being this afraid to look out my front window at 4:30 when the alarm goes off. I don't remember this many. I mean, car accidents. And look, I'm looking at I-15 right now. Is that 12 South? I'm looking at the camera right there. And again, there's another, it looks like a slide off or something going on there. It's slow traffic. So we're going to head over to the traffic center, get you the update on everything that's going on out there in just a moment. And straight ahead, got bald tires? Don't know it? We're going to teach you how to know it next.
Brewing Utah weather. Special coverage on KSL News Radio.
Well, to round up our wall-to-wall coverage of all the snow we've been getting from Weber, you know, County, Davis County, and Salt Lake County now, at least to about Murray. Stopped at about Murray. We're going to go live in a moment up to Snow Basin. We're also going to get Burt Brothers into the conversation, Dave, about how to know if your tires are bald.
Yeah, I'll tell you. All the years I've lived here, I've never seen anything like it. And the numbers are proving that to be the case. We are seeing snow totals, especially in the mountains, because that's really where I like to track it. I want to know what's going on at the ski resorts. Staggering amounts of snow. I grew up at Snow Basin. Snow Basin, Powder Mountain, those were my two resorts where I did most of my skiing. But Basin has been pummeled by snow totals. Debbie, in the last 24 hours, almost 3 full feet of snow.
Kayla McFarland, PR and Communications Manager for Snow Basin. Are you buried in it up there?
Oh, we sure are. In fact, we're digging out still.
I was wondering about that. I wondered if the ski lifts are even running right now because you've got to create a pathway, right?
We have all hands on deck for sure, and it took a little bit of time because, you know, we were for sure buried this morning more than we were even kind of expecting. So it took a minute, but we do have most lifts open at this point, but a few that are just going to remain closed so that we can keep everything safe.
Ever had a season like this one at Snow Basin, Kayla?
No, I can say no. This is for sure a record-breaking year in pretty much every category that we've seen on the record books and in our over 80 years of operation. So pretty wild.
Well, and this has been a long storm. This isn't just yesterday. It seems like for the past week, it has just been very similar.
Yeah, it's pretty much never ending. We've had 90 inches the last 7 days from, I mean, the snow that kind of stopped for a second. You get a little peek of the blue skies and then it kind of comes back hard.
Well, we're looking forward to those bluebird ski days. Kayla McFarland of Snow Basin, thanks so much for jumping on the line with us.
Brewing Utah weather. Special coverage on KSL News Radio.
All right, let's flip the phone lines over to Jake Burt from Burt Brothers. Jake, I'm actually on my way to the tire store after the show because I found out last week my tires are just like stripped on the inside. The rear tires, there's nothing left of them. But I would have never have known that. So, you know, it was on a lift and I was able to see it, but the outside looked great. So how do we know when our tires are balding? What's the trick?
Well, regular maintenance, visual inspections, super easy ways really for you to, get a grasp of what you've got left on your tread. I think the best notifier is just knowing how available you are to stop when you need to stop. you test it out in an empty parking lot. If you feel like your braking capacity is there, you know, do a little visual inspection, put your fingers in the treads and see if they, you know, you can get in between those little tread lines, you know, to really find and see. But if you're feeling slippery, you're feeling unsafe, that's usually the gut check too, that's telling you, hey, you know what, I should probably put some money in my budget for tires because you're going to be needing them. But definitely visual inspections, checking your air pressure, checking the tread depths. You know, there is little gauge tools that you can measure with to tell you how far you're getting down there. You can look at the tires. There's tread wear indicators that can kind of let you know you're getting down there. But I think the best thing to do is just take that gut check and just really feel. You probably felt you're sliding around a little bit. Wasn't performing like it has in the past. And so, you know, put those details together right there. Get it checked out. Mm-hmm. Get it into a shop for a free inspection. You know, I'm sure any one of our stores would love to look at your tires, let you know how much longer you can go, and, you know, get you taken care of to make sure you're safe. That's most important.
Jake, what does it mean if they're wearing unevenly? Is that normal or is that a cause of concern?
Cause of concern, definitely. You'll want to find out how often you're rotating them. You know, want to keep that on a regular schedule right there. Alignments could need some front end parts. You know, we don't have to do safety inspections anymore around here, so we're not really getting our cars checked out as, you know, as much as we should be, you know. So really take advantage of those inspections when you can to get that clean bill of health, you know, to make sure that your car is performing at where it needs to be, you know, because you can have a worn, you know, tie rod end or some kind of front end part up on the car that can cause that tire wear that, you know, they have those components on the back also. And like I say, you don't think about them. You're just driving until you kind of have a problem right there. And so regular inspections can definitely help you kind of stay ahead of it right there. You know, hopefully you're getting your oil changes or doing maintenance along the way. And just ask.
Jake, I've just got a real quick question for you. We've got about 30 seconds because Dave brought this up earlier in the show when we're watching people sliding off the road. And that's why we wanted to get you on the line is because there's some bald tires out there and people don't know they're driving on bald tires. But Dave said there's a penny test. Do you recommend you stick a penny inside a tire?
Yeah. Grab Lincoln's head. Just put it upside down. If you can see the top of Lincoln's head, it is definitely time for tires, you know. So you want to put it in between the tread grooves, not just on the tallest part of the tire, but like the shortest part of the tire, if that makes sense, in between the tread grooves. If you can see Lincoln's head, that's like 3/32 of an inch. It's actually less than that. You're sliding around today, definitely, you know. So if that helps you answer that question.
That is good.
100%.
Thanks. You don't want to see Lincoln's head. That's the key. All right, Jake Burke, thank you for joining us from Burke Brothers. We appreciate that.
Oh. Yeah, Dave, thank you guys.
Thanks, Jake. Appreciate you jumping on the line with us. I'll be glad to get new tires. I didn't have a problem driving in this morning, but Salt Lake County, South End, there wasn't the snow, just a little flurries here and there that you had up north, Dave. I know Maria, that is her top story today, and she will be tracking that along with the other top story of the day, which is the shooting in Nashville, Tennessee at that Presbyterian school.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.